Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Obviously, there are some differences between us in the precise formulations and language, and that's going to happen between friends.
I was a little confused when they told me I was coming here to address the Women's Leadership Forum because I address a Women's Leadership Forum every night at dinner. I have Michelle, Malia, Sasha, my mother-in-law.
You hear women cackling in the background? That's women's liberation. Unbelievable. Like hens in a hen house. The great master has walked into the hen house and they're laughing. He walks into the hen house, the liberation, women's forum. And all he does is have to appear and they start hackling like in a hen house. So it opens with Obama. Yesterday he stabbed Israel in the back. Today he didn't know what he did. I didn't mean to do it. I didn't mean to put the knife in your back. I meant to put the knife in the map. It slipped out of my hand. It redesigned the borders. I didn't mean the borders of... It doesn't really matter. And as far as the right of return, of course, Obama agreed with Netanyahu that they don't agree with the right of return. But here in America, we've already agreed to the right of return. We have 30 million illegal aliens, and we're welcoming in more of them. There's a right of return. Give them back California, New Mexico, Arizona. Throw in Illinois and New York, and there you go, the right of return. Not one word about what's going on in this country. I'm supposed to be worried about Israel. Anyway, Obama got the dose of reality. He had a war hero come and see him, and I guess he couldn't bamboozle him the way he thought he could. He wasn't exactly a rabbi from the local synagogue coming in to sit at his feet. And he said, no way are we going back to the 67 borders, and I'm not going to talk about it. What about the socialist pig? Well, he's out on bail. How about the Libya war deadline? There's supposedly a War Powers Act, and dictator Obama was supposed to get back to Congress by today to seek their okay to continue the war in Libya. And the dictator said, not interested. The deadline came and went without a vote, and the passive, useless Congress did nothing. Unbelievable to me. We're living in a dictatorship. American cleric may have played key role in 9/11. Did you hear about this one? A radical Muslim was invited right into the Defense Department to lecture them about Islam, Muslims, how peaceful they all are. And now, of course, he's on a network, they found out, to aid hijackers. But don't tell that to the dunces in the Defense Department. So you know what? I'm not even going to talk about any of this. You know what I'm going to talk about? I got a series of 25 questions that I'm going to run by you from an individual who wants to write, put me into a book he's doing of people or this and that. And I'm going to ask you how you would answer them yourself about your life. It came to me from a Bert Prelutsky who's doing a book. And these are questions for me. One, what did your father do for a living? Was it something you ever wanted doing? Okay. I'm not even going to answer them right now. I'm going to make believe they're being asked of you. Savage, you spent a great many years earning advanced degrees in the field of science. What made you decide to give it up for a career in broadcasting? Answer, there was no money in science. I couldn't make a living in it. They only wanted to hire unqualified minorities and unqualified women in my field. Three, what is the best piece of advice you ever received, and were you wise enough to accept it at the time? Well, the best piece of advice I ever received was too much push or no good, and I was not wise enough to accept it at the time. By the time I did, it was too late. Four, what is the worst piece of advice you ever received, and were you wise enough to reject it? I'll have to think about that. What book has had the greatest influence on you, and why did it resonate with you? Don't know. Seven, have you any hobbies? That's an interesting question. I have very few. I bicycle every day, modestly. moderately, because just a lot of guys drop dead in their 30s. Did you see the story the other day about the guy who died? He was a rock climber, perfect shape. He was climbing in Yosemite with his family. They fell into a ravine, the poor guy, and died. He was in perfect shape, but he died of a heart attack. Now, I got to tell you something, all of you exercise fanatics out there, don't do it. The human being was not meant to run, to jump beyond a certain age. Yes, of course, keep yourself working and limber, but you don't understand that. See, this is a problem with America. There's no balance. First with the most sedentary people on earth, then with the most fanatical on earth. I was in my early 30s, and I was a runner. I was lean. I had let us say this, that my cholesterol level was lower than my IQ. That's a good line. My cholesterol level was lower than my IQ. That's a funny statement. But my IQ was over 170. My cholesterol was like 140. And I was 130 pounds. I was eating fish. I was limber. I was lean, and I was half crazy from exercising. So one day, I'm running up the back of a valley to a waterfall, as I did very, very regularly. I hated it. And I'm running, and I hear an inner voice screaming. It says, stop, stop running. You'll kill you. Stop running. You're going to die. Stop. I thought I went crazy. Well, guess what? I stopped running. I never ran again. I have never run again. And that was a long time ago. I don't run. And the reason is that running damages your joints. There's no question about it. Very few runners after the age of 50 have not had a joint replacement of some kind or severe arthritis. I bicycle. I have no arthritis. None. I do moderate bicycling a couple of miles a day to the mall and back, walk around, look at people, you know, blah, 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 and keep it moderate. Never push your heartbeat beyond a certain point. I'm warning you that many people are so fanatic, they don't understand they're going to get a blowout. That's a long answer. So hobbies, I bicycle moderately. I boat on weekends. I play with my dog and I watch movies on television. I occasionally will read a novel. I mean, I do a daily radio show and I write books. Is that not enough? How much am I supposed to do? Do you realize that because I work so intently that I'm allowed to do nothing? Why must I use every moment to achieve something? Why must I improve myself every second? What kind of insanity is this American view of the world that every second a man must improve himself? I'm going to be so improved that by the time I go to the grave, I'm going to be the most improved man in the graveyard. I have a PhD, 2 master's degrees. I've written 27 books. I do a daily radio show. I'm working on a nonfiction book, and I'm working on and the novel was just finished. It'll be out in September. Is that not enough for you? All right, I'll work on getting a television show again. Many people want me on TV. How about if I do a weekend TV show on MSNBC? That would be great. I could jam up their ratings. I mean, right through the ceiling. Can you imagine the idiots they have on that network? Martin Bashir? He's like a pallbearer at a British funeral. What's that other one? Every word out of her mouth is like false irony. She still thinks she's in college. Rachel Maddow, her idea of intelligence is to be semi-ironic with every other statement, like she's talking to her girlfriends in a college dormitory. I mean, irony and intelligence are not necessarily the same thing, Rachel. I guess you haven't gone past that age level. Any other hobbies? Truthfully, no, not really. Who or what makes you laugh? Can I sneakily tell you that I watched a rerun of Curb Your Enthusiasm and I started to laugh because he is such a stereotype of the Schlemiel Jew. He plays a stereotype. What's his name? Larry David is the Jewish equivalent of Step and Fetch It. Many black people understand that in the 1940s, whites were afraid of blacks, and so they liked the stereotype of the servile, stupid black who says, yeah, I'm coming, boss. And well, the American and the white people laughed at Step and Fetch It. It wasn't very good for the black people. It provoked stereotypes for 20, 30 more years. Larry David is the Jewish equivalent of Step and Fetch It. He continues to push the stereotype of the Jewish loser. He's cheap. He's nasty. He cuts people off. Selfish, narcissistic, you name it. But the funny thing is I found myself laughing because he was such a perfect model of everything wrong with a man that it was funny. It was the segment rerun where the wife leaves him because she was in an airplane and she was about to die. The plane said it showed her in a set of a plane and it's shaking and bouncing and she doesn't know what to do. So she thinks she's going to die and she calls her husband at home and he's talking to a TV repairman who's there to fix his TiVo. And he says, I can't hear you. What? And she says, if I die, tell my mother. What? I can't hear you. Wait. He says, I'll call you back. Call me in 15 minutes. So that's the end of their marriage. She gets off the plane. Meanwhile, she grabbed the guy's hand next to her, which she thought she was going to, and she falls in love with a guy who designs underwear. But it was very funny. I also laugh watching South Park. I think it's the most brilliant cartoon I've ever seen. It's the best since Mickey Mouse. Last night I watched one. I was screaming with laughter. The dog thought I was crazy. It was about, let us put it this way in a polite manner. You know what just happened to the IMF chief? Okay, and you know what part of his body that has to do with? It was about that part of a man's body in the form of a schoolboy who's told that his part is smaller than all of the other boys in the classroom. And he gets angry and he gets into a complex. They put him into anger management with adults, this little kid. It's one of the funniest things in the world, all of the people that the South Park guys put into anger management. And it included a white guy who's wearing like a Tea Party a shirt, and he's carrying a gun, and he says, well, that Obama's birth certificate, that's why I'm angry all the time. He don't have a birth certificate. That's... Oh, did I enjoy myself. I'll be right back. Savage. Look, if you're really a political junkie and you really need politics, go to michaelsavage.com. You can catch yesterday's soundbite where I told you what I predict is going to happen based upon the Bible. And I read from Ezekiel. If you need to hear my voice giving you a prophecy from the Bible, go to Michael Savage and listen to it. But I'm going to go back to questions sent to me from a gentleman who's writing a book and ask me to answer them. But answer them yourself about your own self. That's the point of my reading it to you, right? Have you any hobbies? Please don't call me with your hobbies. We're not interested. Who or what makes you laugh, Michael Savage? I told you. South Park. Have you a favorite piece of music? Well, I don't hum a particular tune every single day. A favorite piece of music? You mean one tune? I mean, then I'd be in a nut house. I don't limit myself to one tune. I mean, what do you mean a favorite piece of music? There's music I like, and it's quite diverse, from John Coltrane to... I guess I should throw in a little bit of other music, but there's lots of other music that I've talked about. I like old rock and roll from the 50s. If you were to ask me truthfully, classic music that brings tears to my eyes, there's only one composer that does it, and it's Beethoven, because his genius is so awesome that it makes me weep to think that a human being could be so incredibly out of the realm of the rest of us. Question 10. If you didn't know your actual age, how old would you think you are? 25? 11. Let us see. What is your favorite movie and what makes it special for you? I would have to say GF1, GF2 still have to be in the top 10. It's not the only ones. But the movies keep coming back to me, my favorite movies. I mean, I wouldn't say Patton was really that great. I can't watch it again. I can give you some obscure movies. Before the Devil Knows You're Dead is one of my favorite movies. I think he's a great actor. The director just died. My God, was that a great movie. What was the most traumatic event of your life, and what, if anything, did you learn from it? By the way, folks, this is for you. I am reading you questions for me. However, feel free to join in with answers to some of these as it relates to your life. What was the most traumatic event of your life, and what, if anything, did you learn from it? Well, I don't think it's your business for me to read it on the air. Is there anybody you envy? If so, who and why? That's a tough one. We all envy somebody at some time. As an adult, I don't know that I have much envy left. Oh, yeah, I'm competitive. Yes, I am. In that regard, I'm competitive with everyone on the earth sometimes, and other times I turn my head and say, who cares? But is there anybody that I envy? I don't know if I'm lying to myself. I can't think of anybody right now. I would have to say if I could have one aspect of my being that was never realized, that's how I would put it, rather than envy, like figuratively, like what do you wish you could do that you can't do and it's too late to do? I'd like to be who I am intellectually, mentally who I am, and I'd like to be an extreme fighter. Would I have kicked some ass? I could say, actually, thank God I'm not an extreme. What if I was one of those guys who was like made of, there are guys who are genetically stronger than the rest of us. I met them as kids when I was growing up. These are the guys who were the born warriors and fighters. You know them as kids? I mean, you knew them as kids. They could fall off like a, it starts in a playground. They could fall off a swing set and not cry after banging their head against the cement bottom. They get up and smile. You ever see those kind of kids? Then later on, I mean, you know, they fall off a toboggan and drop down 30 feet and they get up smiling. Then when they get older and they get into a fight, you can hit them and nothing hurts them. That type. Had I been that type, I would probably, I would say, have been executed by now for several homicides. Or I would be in Pelican Bay like Lecter. But thank God I am not made that way. So all I do is write books instead to get even and do a radio show. I understand that yours is the third most popular radio talk show in America. Are you more surprised that you are that popular or that you're not number one? No, I would say that the fact that the show is number three is a miracle, given that it comes on later in the day and that it's not in every major city and that the syndicator is an independent and we don't cater to anybody. Neither I nor the syndicator pander to the forces that Mr. Number One has to pander to. I don't toe the GOP party line, nor do I read GOP song sheets, which he does on a daily basis. Savage, being as outspoken as you are about such things as America's borders, language, and culture, you are a lightning rod for any number of groups, ranging from illegal aliens, run-of-the-mill libs, to dedicated socialists and one-worlders. Do you find yourself granting that any of the criticism directed at you holds water? No. 17. If Hollywood were ever to produce the Michael Savage story, whom would you regard as ideal casting in the starring role? Liam Neeson. But he doesn't look like me. That's the problem. I'm far better looking than him. But he would be a good actor for the role. He could never do the part. He doesn't have the nuance nor the cultural background to be me. I don't know who could play me. There must be somebody. I don't know who could really do it and do it right. I mean, there are guys who could do it and make a mockery of me, but I certainly don't think that they could catch the whole picture of Michael Savage. You want me to answer a question another way? If you were to say to me, which piece ever written about you do you think is the closest to who you really are? The New Yorker. In fact, I was going to send a thank you note to the author of the New Yorker article. I think it's the finest, most balanced piece ever written about me. And as a result, he was slammed because what? You're a man of African and English heritage, they said, and you didn't slam Michael Savage? And you write for the New Yorker? Savage. If Hollywood were ever to produce the Michael Savage story, whom would you regard as ideal casting in the starring role? I don't know. Do you have an idea? Anyone have an answer to this? Let's go to Sacramento. Lisa, who should play Michael Savage in a movie?
I think Robert De Niro. You remember the movie? I can't think of the name with Billy Crystal. You know, you're good.
Oh, wait a minute. Where he plays the aging mafia guy who's a psychiatrist. He needs a psychiatrist. Uh-huh. What was that called? That was very funny.
I can't think of the name.
I think that's the funniest movie. Yeah, analyze that. Analyze that.
That. Or analyze this or something.
Do you remember Robert De Niro in the movie This Boy's Life set in... was that the one where he plays a stepfather? And not in the Bronx. That's a Bronx tale. Where he plays the adopted father of a kid in Oregon. That was back in the... When Leon DiCaprio was a little kid. That really made DiCaprio. See... Let me say this. De Niro would be perfect because he and I are similar faces, incidentally. Our bone structure, I'm struck sometimes by how similar we look. In other words, if my hair were put a certain way, I'd look like him. But he could not play the part even if he wanted to because he's too liberal. He's a very, very severe liberal guy. That's his right. Okay, we live in America. I tell you, the ideal director for this movie would be Scorsese, but he wouldn't do it because he's from the same LU as De Niro, and they do... fundamentally see the world in the exact same way, and they would never be able to do me. It's not going to happen. The only movie that might ever happen, and I got derailed for 2 years now because of my legal troubles, is the documentary I talked about in the show 2 years ago. But this legal fight has sucked me dry, and as a result, I've been derailed in what I really have been wanting to do. So it will happen one day with God's will and your listenership. Thanks for the call. Let's see. Next one. 20. Which of the possible candidates would you like to see running against Obama in 2012? Ha! Hey! Well, let's come up with a real nationalist and conservative. Do you know of any? 21. If you would care to critique the radio competition, what do you think of them? Answer. Meh. They all do their own thing. I have nothing to say about them. 22. If with the snap of your fingers you could change anything about America, what would it be? The impeachment of Obama. Now, the reason I say it is because that would bring up all of the things he has done that are both crimes and misdemeanors. He just committed another crime today. This petty dictator committed another crime today. Congress has said you had 60 days since going to war in Libya to come to Congress for approval, and he said go to hell. I'd rather do a stand-up comedy with the women who sound like clucking hens. If with a snap of your fingers you could change anything about Michael Savage, what would it be? That's a big, tough question. I don't know if I have many regrets. I'm not the perfect man. I'm as flawed as the next guy. I struggle with myself every day to try to not go off the rails. Truthfully, I don't have an answer. If with a snap of your fingers you could change anything about Michael Savage, what would it be? You mean physically? You want to get into physical or you want to get into mental? 24. If you could invite any 8 people to a dinner party, and for this one evening they could all speak English, who would they be? Now, the man didn't say whether they were living or, you know, dead, deceased. Let us say it includes deceased men. If you could invite any 8 people to a dinner party, and for this one evening they could all speak English, who would they be? Well, let's start with Moses. I'd put him at the head of the table. On the other head of the on the other side of the table, I'd put Abraham, the father of the 3 monotheistic religions. That would be the starter. Flanking them along the other sides, that only leaves these 3 people on each side. I guess to be PC, I have to throw in a woman. I can't think right now, but I definitely would want Winston Churchill to be sitting at the table. He's one of my heroes. I think Douglas MacArthur would be phenomenal. Patton would have to be there. Absolutely, General Patton would have to be. In fact, I take Patton over MacArthur because he was more outspoken. MacArthur was a fabulous general, but he wasn't on the order of the daring that I like in a man. And I think that, therefore, I would rather have, if I'm limited now, I'd have to have Patton at the table. Who else? Science-wise, I would say Einstein, but I don't know that I would get along with him very well. I think he and I would argue a lot. I think he and I would clash immediately. We would be fighting for the same niche. Since our intelligence is about the same level of IQ, we'd fight continuously over everything from the dishes to the service. So maybe Einstein. Probably instead, if I would pick another scientist, I'd have to have, absolutely have to have, Charles Darwin. And I know that would offend those of you who think that dinosaurs rule the earth right now in Africa, that there have been reports of Tyrannosaurus Rex in South Africa. But I would think Charles Darwin, who was always one of my heroes. It was actually Alfred Russel Wallace who led me into science, but I don't want to bore you with the details about Alfred Russel Wallace, who actually elucidated the theory of evolution at about the same time as Darwin, but he was poor. Russell Wallace was. He came from a lower middle class family. Darwin came from an upper class family, so he deferred to the rich man in England at the time and said, he is a gentleman, therefore he should present his paper first. But Alfred Russel Wallace was probably the better man in that he had to overcome a lot of impediments in order to get to that point. So who else would be at the table in the field of science? I would say Bertrand Russell, who was always one of my mental heroes. In fact, I named my son for him. I know that Bertrand Russell politically was extremely to the left, but that was a different... You have to understand that the times were different. Many fine people in the 30s and 40s were left-wingers. They wouldn't be if they were alive today. In fact, most of them would be who I am. You don't understand that. It made sense to be a left-winger while Hitler was coming along. Do you understand that? It didn't mean you had to support Stalin or such in order to oppose Hitler, but many of them made that mistake of jumping into the Russian camp. You could have hated Hitler without becoming a Stalinist. Unfortunately, many American intellectuals did not know there was some other ground to go down. They were doctrinaire and knee-jerk, and they jumped right into the Stalinist crowd, rather. They made that mistake. So I didn't finish the table yet. Now, what woman would be there? I guess I'd have to say Ayn Rand, okay? Because, you know, her books are very intriguing. She was a stalwart intellectual, great intellect of her own right. But I would pick Madame Curie over her if I could. I really would. I haven't read Madame Curie's philosophy, but I would like to certainly know what her mind was like to have achieved what she achieved at the time that she achieved it. You want to go back in time, maybe Joan of Arc? Please don't say, why didn't you invite Betsy Ross? I don't know. I can't relate to Betsy Ross. If you could invite 8 people to a dinner party, does that about does it? I don't know. I would actually throw Marlon Brando into the mix because he'd be an interesting dinner guest. I saw him on the Larry King show sort of before he died when he was picking his toes and throwing the skin at Larry King. No one saw that. Larry King didn't even know that Marlon Brando was fundamentally putting him down. He's such a yuck. Larry King is such a yetz. Now, Marlon Brando agrees to come on the show. He takes his sandals off, and he's cleaning in between his toes and flipping, like, the lint and the skin towards Larry King. Larry King is such a yetz, he doesn't even know that he's being ridiculed, insulted, debased. Larry King is the equivalent, is the talk equivalent of Larry David. You know, there's a stereotype like Larry David is. Marlon Brando was throwing dead skin at him. And he didn't even recognize that it was a put-down. All he was thinking of ratings. Finally, if there is a question you wish I had asked, what is it and what is your answer? Thank you, Dr. Savage, for agreeing to take part in this endeavor. Well, I hope that I didn't bore you with my answers. But, you know, I read this for a reason. One, because I thought this was a more interesting show topic than Netanyahu and the dictator we have in the White House. And two, because I thought it would trigger thinking in your own mind. And I could go back over the questions if, you know, if your carrying capacity is not that great. Las Vegas, Ken, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
God bless your work, Dr. Savage. For actors, I was thinking Al Pacino or the stretch Andrew Dice Clay if he could do the dramatic.
I think Pacino would do a great job. Andrew Dice Clay is absolutely the wrong person to play me. He is so nowhere today. He was way ahead of his time when he came out in the 80s. I thought he did a great job, but he's gone nowhere. Pacino, on the other hand, is still pumping it out and still has the capacity to do it. But you see, but Pacino could play me today. He couldn't play me as a young man collecting plants. I mean, who's going to play me in the jungles of the South Pacific collecting plants, living on a shoestring while supporting a family because I believed I was saving the world? Who in the world could do that? And by the way, how many of them would even want the world to see that side of me? The answer is none of them. 1-800-449-8255. Sacramento, California. Rob, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hey, I got to say, I'm glad to hear that you got the relax last night and laughed to South Park because laughing is so healthy. I mean, we, as listeners, love to hear you breathe fire and go into a Hulk rage and throw shoes at Obama over the radio. But, you know, I'm glad to hear you got the relax. Did you have a vodka?
Oh, come on. South Park is so funny. How could you not laugh? Those guys are brilliant.
Oh, I love that show. Ever since it came out, I knew it was going to be a hit.
Did you see the one that I saw last night where it's about a little boy whose private part is smaller than the – he finds out it's smaller than the other classmates. Yeah. And he gets so angry they put him into anger management with adults?
That's their humor. They're the best.
I don't know how they do it. I just don't know how these guys come up with these plots. But in the anger management class where this little kid is put from the there's the stereotype of the right wing nut tea party goer. You know, I had to laugh at it because it is a stereotype. The guy is screaming that Obama, he's not a citizen. I haven't seen his real birth certificate. That's why I'm mad. I was laughing hysterically. Come on, the stereotype was funny, wasn't it? Would you hang up on me?
No. I was saying your boy was probably crying. It was so funny.
I was. The dog even enjoyed my laugh. The dogs are funny. When you're happy, they're happy. When you're sad, they run. When Teddy hears me start yelling and screaming over something, his tail goes between his legs and he goes and hides under a piece of furniture. Hey, it's Rock and Roll Friday. So my friends there in the sound department, what do you got for my audience out there? What are we going to play for them right now? Oh, I love it. If I could turn the clock back, I would be going to a dance tonight with this song playing. I'd be 17 years old and know what I know now. And wind up where the French socialist is tomorrow. No, you could not do what we did as young men in this day. I was thinking about it. I don't understand how a guy goes out on a date anymore. It's good that most of the girls are sluts when you think about it. If the girls were not as slutty as the guys, almost every guy in America would be in jail today. Cymbal shot. Now, think about what I just said. Because everything that a guy did in my generation would be considered, like, illegal today with a woman. No girl, none of the girls that I knew of were willing partners in bed. You always had to, like, either cajole them, force them, get them drunk, right? And all of those things are now illegal. But it was all a game. In other words, I didn't really mean to do it. But so today they call what? They call the police and you'd be arrested the next day? They take a sample of your DNA? No girl willingly went to bed with a guy that I knew of unless they were like sexually promiscuous. They were known as nymphomaniacs. And I wouldn't go out with anybody like that. They were like terrifying. You wouldn't want to go out with like a sicko. I mean, would you? I mean, I felt bad for them. I told you about the Nympho and Alley Pond Park story, and I'm not going to repeat it. It's actually sad when you see a person with that kind of illness. You know, you don't take advantage of it. How could you find that to be sexually appealing? I couldn't anyway. So naturally, the girls in that age were basically, oh, no, I don't really want to, don't force. And you had to basically, I don't know how to put it in a delicate manner, you had to be aggressive in my day and age to, let us say, do that thing with a woman. You ought to be aggressive. So today that aggression is considered illegal because of hags like Bella Abzug and the other psychotic feminists who destroyed the sexes, destroyed the race, and destroyed the entire nation. Okay? I'll be right back.
Savage.
Devil or angel, I can't make up my mind. Which one you are, I'd like.
This is your agent of change, Michael Savage, 1-800-449-8255. It's open mic to Mike Friday. I'm reading from a series of questions sent to me by an author, and I've opened it up to you, my friends. I want to just say two things before I take your calls. I'm feeling extraordinarily good, which is always a bad sign, because when I feel good, it means the crash is not too far behind. So I don't know. I do know why I'm feeling particularly good. It's not like good news came. You want to hear something weird? I have like three, you know, I collect antique clocks, right? You know, the pendulums and you wind them. And I'm very, because I grew up with the business. Two of them have stopped working the same day. And one of them was as reliable as a Rolex. It's 100 years old. It's made of marble. It's gorgeous. You know, like a three-piece clock set. And it stopped. I can't get it to run again. It's like very spooky. So that's not why I feel good. No, I don't feel good because the clock stopped. I called my clock guy to come out. I was glad he's still living. I haven't seen him in a year. Oh, does he have trouble? But anyway, I tried something new. I've been taking niacin because I can't get the cholesterol under control. I told you my blood tests were horrendous. If it wasn't for lipoprotein A, I would have been dead 20 years ago. It's the only confounding variable in my blood lipid chemistry. I don't take Lipitor. I don't take any of those substances because I tried them and I get the muscle aches. I can't deal with it. So I know it's toxic for me, okay? And there are people who just can't deal with it. So, okay, I've used all of the nutritional knowledge I've had all these decades. I've written books, remember, in the late 60s and early 70s. I was way ahead of everybody in nutrition that you know of. I mean, whatever the expert may be, I'm probably the oldest one around. I wrote books about it in the 70s. So I follow my own advice up to a point, but I started to slip over the last few years. I started to eat real garbage off and on. And as a result, the blood chemistry is horrendous. It was frightening. Then the blood sugar was off the charts this time, and I really got freaked by that because I have no diabetes. And I said, the reason that's happening is because you stopped your bicycling, and also you're eating a little more of the sugars, which you have never done religiously. See, you start to slip and you pay for it. But the good news was, I've taken a certain kind of fish oil that's enteric coated, and I cut my triglycerides by 50% over 3 months, which is amazing. Direct result of the fish oils, nothing else. Fish oils, bingo, triglycerides went down to 150 from like 300 to 320. But the LDL, the HDL, upside down, the VLDL, I mean, you talk about statistics. I'm a statistical walking time bomb. I should have been dead already by the numbers. But there's one confounding variable. It's LPA. And this protein, this lipid carries the good cholesterol into the cells. And it's extremely perfect, this LPA. And you can't correct it with any nutrient. There's no drug that corrects it. So that's a genetic plus. Thank God I got some of my mother's genes. Oh, Ma, thank you in heaven. I mean, thank God some of the matrilineal genetic components came into my being. Wow. Whoa, it was bad. I'm not saying anything about the father line, but, man, they were all dead 45, 50. Why did they all die so young? The Philip Morris, I think. And the worry, the immigrant worry. I got to carry. But I worry plenty. I mean, if it was really stress, come on. Who has a higher stress job than I do? What, a bus driver? A long-distance pilot? I don't know. I mean, I have a very high stress level, what I have to do. So it's not stress. It's how you deal with the stress. And whether it, you know, converts the lipids into oxidative products and clogs your arteries, in essence, to put it very simply. But I've been saturated with vitamin C and vitamin E and the B vitamins for 35 years. My blood is saturated with vitamin C and vitamin E, and I mean the mixed tocopherols, and I mean high doses of vitamin C. I mean 2 grams a day at least, more when I don't feel good. And I do certain herbs, tons of garlic. Admittedly, I'm not drinking as much as I used to. I'm sorry to say. I've cut back on my alcohol. I just can't tolerate it around the allergy season. I hate it. Take one sip, it's like horrendous. I just don't drink this time of year. One drink, and that's about all I can take. Wine, forget about it. Puts me like into the nut house. But I got to tell you something. You know what I had for lunch today? Why I have so much energy? I was shocked. For the first time in years, I started to go back to a book I wrote in 72 called Nutrition Against Aging. And I remember discovering some writings about anchovies. So I had my housekeeper buy anchovies the other day. And I put them on a half of a goat cheese corn pizza that I buy, like, prepared. Put it in the oven. And the anchovies combined with I took a massive dose of B vitamins. And anchovies, I am flying. I mean, I'm like high on this stuff. You talk about a natural high. Try anchovies and B vitamins. You know, the Portuguese fishermen. But you know what the source of these anchovies? I wish they were from California. They're from Morocco. I really hope that Obama doesn't set Morocco on fire, because then I'll have to find a new source of anchovies. I mean, please, Soros, stay out of Morocco for a while. I did like these anchovies. See if you can not ruin something on the earth with your poisonous mind, you know?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds, because you're mine. I walk the line.
Welcome to the Savage Nation, one of America's great sons, Johnny Cash. And it's open mic to Mike. You know, feel free to call in on any political topic. If you're bored with the personal, then make it political. But you know, with me, the personal is political, and the political is very personal. So in the last hour, I was reading 25 questions that were sent to me by an author who wants to, you know, write something up about me for a book he's doing, etc., blah, blah, blah. And I asked you to join in with your answer to, like, have you any hobbies or what makes you laugh? But don't call about those things. So now I want to launch into something else. As the last hour drew to an end here on the Savage Nation, I was telling you I'm flying high right now on anchovies and B vitamins. I know it sounds weird. Like, what kind of lunch is that? Where'd you get it? What restaurant? No, I wrote a book, and I've written 28 books, and one of my previous field was nutrition, as you know. I'm a famous nutritionist and herbalist. Very proud to say so, by the way. I know the left is really amazing. They try to smear me with my expertise while they themselves love these fields, but because I was in it, suddenly I can't be a conservative, you think, right? Because I was a nutritionist and an expert herbalist, therefore I must be a left-wing fanatic, moron. It doesn't work that way. Most scientists are conservative, schmuck, except the idiots sold out to the government financing bureaus to tell global warming. So anyway, I referred to back in the 70s, I wrote a book called Nutrition Against Aging. And for the research to that book, I remember at that time writing about McCulley's great work on homocysteine levels and driving them down with folate and B6. And Also, there was a time when anchovies were very there was a lot of interest in anchovies because they're rich in RNA. They're a superfood, okay? Most people don't like anchovies. So today, I went back to my old writings, and you know what I had? I had a salad for lunch. I mean, I know you're really interested in this. But then I took a massive B vitamin dose and anchovies on a half a corn goat cheese pizza that I heated up. And I feel like I'm like electrified, like I'm flying. I must tell you of a dream. That's what I'm trying to get to. It's so important that I remember to tell you this. 4 a.m, I have a startling dream last night that was directly for the audience. The dream is this. It's about talk radio. And like out of the blue, God comes to me and says in the dream, don't worry about it. Talk radio is going to be bigger than ever in the very near future. And I said, well, why, God? And God says, because with the control over people's mouths and minds in the schools, in the workplace, in their own home, they're afraid to express their views. They cannot express their views virtually anywhere except on talk radio. I said, thank you, God. He says, can I go on with my work now? I said, sure, that was very nice of you. Thanks. It's true. I woke up and I said, what a revelation that was. Because of the communism in the United States of America that's posing as liberalism, you know you're not free to express yourself politically at work. You know that. You're not free to express yourself in a school or a university, at the workplace, on a shopping center line. Even in your own house, you're afraid to say something for being reported by the communist liberal bastards. The only outlet you have is talk radio. And I don't really care what anybody says. It's the freest voice in the United States of America, talk radio. I talk, you react. You can call it with anything you want to say. I mean, short of cursing or calling for someone's injury, you can say anything, okay? Talk radio is going to be bigger than ever under this communist dictator that we have in the White House. This petty dictator is making talk radio even more important. So now I want to go into the personal on the Savage Nation. I just feel like all my 12 cylinders are running again. I swear to God, it has to be the B vitamin. Nothing else would explain it. Nothing. I didn't do anything lewd that I can think of. I didn't take any illegal substances. I never do. It was strictly that large dose of B vitamins and the anchovies. So here I am. I'm as high as a kite, happy as can be. And for me, this is a revelation. I've been really down from the legal problems I've been facing. You know how bad it's been for me. So yesterday or 2 days ago, I go to see my cardiologist. I thank God I haven't had any incidents, but the blood chemistry is horrible. Horrible. I'm like the walking dead. And I've been this way for a long time, but I don't take Lipitor, as I told you, because it makes my muscles screwed up. So I use my own nutrition. And I go to see this cardiologist, great guy, wonderful guy. I totally respect him. His name is Dr. Mark Wexman. And he likes me a lot. And he says to me, Michael, he says to me, he's one of my oldest patients, gave me a tip. I said, well, he's like 95 and he's in great health. So I asked him, he said, what's your secret? And he says to me, Michael, he said to me, never let an old person move into your body. I said, I'm going to say that on the radio. I said, I hope I don't alienate your liberal patients. He says, no, it's okay. And you know, there's a lot of psychology in that. We all know that. In many ways, you are as old as you think you are. You've heard it that way. I knew guys that at 35 or 40 were already acting old. Oh, my back. Oh, they get up and start creaking. They already want that. They put one foot in the grave. Then I know another guy in his 80s who I don't talk to because I don't get along with him, who's as spry as a 15-year-old. He dates 30-year-old women. We won't go into that. To me, that's also an embarrassment, by the way. I don't find that as particularly as appealing as riding a motor scooter. But so I'm going to read you some of the lab results, and then I'm going to take some calls. I'm having such a good time, I'm frightened. So as I said to you, I'm not going to read you all the numbers, okay? But my cholesterol is a nightmare. I'm like a candidate for the morgue, according to these numbers, and have been for a long while. The only good news is that there's one carrier protein that you cannot affect with any nutrient. There's no drug or nutrient that has been discovered or tried that will affect LPA levels. And mine are very low. There it's a 3.0. And it should be less than 10. Now, you know how when you look at your charts, your lab charts, if they're flagged high or low, it's like you're supposed to get scared and get a medication. Every other lipid factor is high or low when it should be the opposite. Everything else is abnormal. LDL cholesterol, 162, it should be lower than 130. HDL cholesterol is 33. It should be above 40. Triglycerides, thank God, I got down to 156. You say, well, that's not good. They should be lower than 150. Yeah, but Johnson, they were 350 last time. But the fish oils have helped me with that. Let me see what else is. So now my vitamin D is low. That's the latest hula hoop of nutrition, is vitamin D. Several years ago, we avoided vitamin D because it was considered to be toxic. Now they've all discovered that vitamin E levels are important. But I don't eat cheese. I don't eat any dairy. And I don't sit in the sun. Lipoprotein A is a 4. And it should be 0 to a 30. So that's very low as well. There's another confounding variable. PLA2, plaque 2, is 178, which is at low risk, which is, again, a confounding variable. So then I'll go into the homocysteine. It went down this time. It was 8.6. It went down 1, which is good. So we've been talking about McCulley's famous work at Harvard in the 1950s with homocysteine, and I wrote about it in my book, Nutrition Against Aging, in 1972, which was published by Bantam, and how vitamin B6 and the folate is so important for controlling homocysteine. People have forgotten all of that. What else do you want to know about my blood chemistry that you should know? Well, nothing other than I'm like a walking specimen here, which, you know what it really proves? Don't get too nervous about the tests that you take. Of course, it's predictive in some regard. But there are many, many cases, you ask any physician who knows what he's talking about, of people with completely reversed blood lipids who live a very long life. And there are people with perfectly within the norm cholesterol, LDL, HDL, LSMFT, and they dropped it at 30 while climbing a mountain. Because there are other factors in life and death and health. You ask any pathologist. Any decent doctor, as I learned in graduate school. I remember when I was going for my PhD, my thesis chairman was a medical doctor who said to me, you know, Michael, don't get too hung up on blood tests. He said, because I've done autopsies on people who were in perfect health, whose arteries are perfectly clear, who died of heart attacks. I said, oh, that's nice. Thank you. That's great to know. They dropped dead with clear arteries? Yes. I said, why? We don't know. I said, how do you explain it? He said, can't explain it. He said one-third of, and at that time, we worked out a model for health and disease, which was one-third was controlled by lifestyle, one-third was controlled by genetics, which you could do nothing about, and one-third was a mystery. You could do nothing about the mystery element. You might put that into the mental, the spiritual, the unknown. But the one-third that you can't control, which is the lifestyle, which is the one you should control. Moderately, though, diet and exercise, diet and exercise, diet and exercise. Absolutely true. But what diet and what exercise? You get fanatic. You kill yourself that way. You got to go out for a meal once in a while and enjoy yourself. It doesn't mean you have to conclude every Italian meal with a tiramisu. I mean, you want to get a heart attack and diabetes. Have a tiramisu every time you eat Italian food. You know, and you'll be singing like the fat lady on the way to the morgue. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So, what's in the news? Let's see. What's in the news is Obama's a lying hypocrite. Yesterday, he tells Israel to move back to the 67 lines. Today, he says he didn't say it. Today, he denied he even said it. Didn't mean it. I meant it another way. I didn't mean move back. I was saying 67 in not a literal sense. It was a figurative sense. I didn't mean 67 in terms of the year. I meant 67 in terms of the riddle of 67. The riddle of 67 means that the borders of Israel should expand to Brooklyn, because I realized that I insulted all the American Jews who were going to withhold money from Democrats, and they went crazy and called me and said, please don't show your true self. Hold it back till after the election. Then you could show you're a radical anti-Semitic communist. Please don't do it now. It'll destroy the party. So today already he's Netanyahu's best friend. What else? Oh, tomorrow the world's coming to an end. I forgot about that. Let's see. Is it tomorrow? Yeah, Rapture Movement predicts end of world on Saturday. I'm actually going to fuel my boat tomorrow. I need 1,000 gallons of fuel for my boat. And I figure I better have a full tank in case I have to cross the River Styx. Definitely need to fuel up that boat because I don't want to get caught with low tanks. You know what I'm saying? I got to go buy 1,000 gallons tomorrow The two tanks hold 1,400 gallons. It's reading low now. So it says low. I mean, because you don't really know. The fuel gauges are very inaccurate on boats. So I got to cross the bay. I'm going to go over to a certain place where it's 50 cents a gallon less. But, gee, it's going to kill me anyway. I go to a pump here. It's 50 cents a gallon more. I go there. It's 50 cents. But at 1,000 gallons, it's $500 saved right there. I hear gas is coming down because they've been gouging us. And the Democrats don't think it's too good for their, you know, $5 a gallon. Maybe I should wait a week, but then I can't use, I don't know what I'm, does anyone know where I can get gas cheaper, some kind of discount? Maybe there's like a Costco for boat gas somewhere. Diesel fuel. What else is in them? So tomorrow is the doomsday, huh? I don't know what that's all about. What are these lunatics? He predicted this in 1994. His church is worth $72 million. You know the doomsday business is good? God, I'm glad I'm not corrupt. You realize if I was corrupt, I'd be like a guru in Oregon, like the Antelope Oregon guru with 17 Rolls Royces, with 25 women throwing themselves at me. I don't want to do that. A, I'd have to listen to them. That's number one. I don't want to put up with that. B, I don't like Rolls Royces because it's from the United Kingdom, so I don't want them. You know what I'm saying? If I wanted a Rolls Royce, I would have bought one by now. It's not like a bad car, but I think of the liars in the English government that banned me. I don't want anything British anymore. I myself, truthfully, I don't. I'm so jaundiced by what they did to me, those bastards. And, you know, this one's no better. Yeah, another lying, two-faced son of a gun. So I never want to go to England again. I want my name off the list because they have no right to put me on with murderers and terrorists. I want to clear my name, and given the fact that no one in America wants to help me, it's a disgrace. So, okay, hundreds of thousands of dollars later, I'm still trying to get my name off the list of murderers and terrorists, all done by that slimy piece of filth, Gordon Brown, and that porno-loving twit that worked for him. See, I'm getting angry again. No good. The LPA will go off the charts in the wrong direction. The triglycerides will go off. The blood pressure will go up. And my dog will hide under a couch, so I got to stop it right now. Okay, Florida. Eddie, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage. I'm 22 and a dedicated listener. I was just wondering if you could enlighten us, maybe tell us how your life was when you were 22 and possibly if there's a certain story that you can remember off the top of your head.
Terrible time. It's a terrible age. Very hard age, 22. Very difficult age because you're coming out of your adolescence. You're going into the adulthood thing, and you're getting very serious about what to do with yourself, and you don't know. So it's pretty, it's very perplexing for you. Am I right?
Yes. I mean,
understand you're not alone. I mean, Siri, I'm trying to be like, you know, uncle-like to you and friendly. It's not an easy age for anyone, the early 20s. Very tough. And it doesn't get any easier when you get into the late 20s, in fact. In fact, it doesn't lighten up till you're 50.
Wow. No,
I tell you, for a guy, I swear to God, the 20s are a hard age. People think, oh, it's great, let's be 20 and we'll just party like them. But they're worried all the time because they realize that they have to get more serious than they are, and they don't really know what to do, and the world's falling apart. They know that they don't have any faith in politics. They have no faith in religion anymore. They don't know where to turn. They don't go to the church because they don't believe in that. They don't go into politics. They don't believe in that. They don't believe in academia because they know there are left-wing fanatics looking to sleep with them. So they don't know which way to turn. So they turn into talk radio where there's a disembodied voice that has some degree of honesty and authority. So, you know, it's an outlet for them. What are you doing right now in your life?
I'm a senior in college. I'm about to finish up my bachelor's in biology, and I plan to apply for medical school.
You know what? It's still a noble profession, even though it's managed care. If you're a caring person and you can still take care of patients, like the nurse in the cardiologist's office, she was a young kid. She must have been 22. We were talking. I said, I don't like the blood pressure cuff. You know, I said, it really hurts me. I said, I guess I'm sensitive. She says, who isn't? I said, why? What bothers you? And she said, just seeing people who are sick. I said, you're a lucky woman that you still care about patients. Don't ever lose that.
Savage. My love must be a kind of blind love. I can't see anyone but
welcome
you.
Back to the Via Dolorosa, the Savage Nation. I love this song. I just love this song. The Shabab Shabab song. I mean, the memories. This is Love by the Sewer Plant time. I could go in. Can I do a Friday afternoon, like 1 minute verbal painting? Okay. Come on, play a little more. I got to get into the set, the mindset. I don't know if it's cloudy or bright. 1955-56. South Fallsburg, New York. In my uncle's Plymouth Fury, or regular Plymouth, we're going back to the area. Like, we rented a house across from the Riverview Hotel. It was owned by a former pugilist who beat up busboys who didn't perform properly and opened their mouth to him. There was no EEOC in those days. If he had a busboy who didn't work properly in the dining room, he gave him a good beating and threw him out in there behind, and threw the suitcase out behind him onto the highway. So the hotel ran like a clock. Everyone was afraid of him. Tough as iron. It was like Once Upon a Time in America. You know what I'm saying? That kind of guy. That's when they threw Jackie Mason in the pool that same summer. It all went around that time. So we're going back to that hotel. We stayed in a house across the street, as I said. And we come upon a fresh auto accident. The car was upside down, not ours. Like, there was still smoke coming out of the car. People were laying all over the roads. They looked like they were dead and injured. It was shocking. And as a little kid, you want to jump out and help. You don't know what to do. What would you do with an injured person? So that's where you want a doctor, like, because you don't know what to do for the people. And that's where your instinct to become someone who gives something to the world comes from. But as a result, since no one was a doctor in the family, they rode right by. And I never forgot that. It really bothered me. I said, well, Uncle, why are you going by that? He said, never mind. We don't know what to do. We don't know. We're liable to hurt them more. And the cops will be here soon. Now, combined with that was that same summer of Love by the Sewer Plant, which I won't bore you with because it's kind of saccharine by this point. You can read it in I don't even know the book anymore. God, I've written so many books, and they're so good. I have done a mountain of work. I'm a leading intellectual of the conservative movement and completely unknown except to 8 to 10 million listeners. Astounding. So let's take the callers on the Savage Nation. Jim in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind, Jim?
Good evening, Michael. I'd like to suggest one of the guests for your dinner party of eight should be Benjamin Franklin.
Oh, he was a major league perv. You know that?
You want to know something?
Do you know that Ben Franklin was the equivalent of the socialist pig who's in an ankle bracelet today? Benjamin Franklin did the same thing with maids in Paris. It's well known. It's in his autobiography. He was a womanizer. Franklin was a nut. He was a sexual nut. He was a sexual libertine. So in other words, what this guy just did from the IMF, Benjamin Franklin was doing.
Not aware of that, but I felt that he was a patriot, a constitutionalist, a writer, an inventor.
He was, but he was also a womanizer. That's what I'm trying to say. The liberals have it all wrong. They think because they're sexually promiscuous, they have to be a liberal. You know, welcome to the club, man. You could be a sexual libertine and a conservative. You can love America and run after things. I mean, what's wrong with them? No, people don't know that. Everything is so cut and dried in America, they don't even know. I didn't mean to bring the guy down. I'm eating a piece of red cabbage. Excuse me. It is so rude. Pardon me. I'm on a health kick now. I want to control the lipids without medicine. I want to prove that I can do it. Okay, Portland, Nancy, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Well, hello. I've been waiting. I wanted to talk about, you said, who in our life did we envy? And I envied my grandmother because of the...
Your grandmother? I when you say grandmother, I think Alan Bates in an old Victorian house up in Oregon.
No, my grandmother came from the Dust Bowl area of Missouri. She was born in Illinois. You know, she was around when they still used the horse and buggy. She saw the cars.
Wow. Oh, so she was a real old-time American.
She was, and she was so wise. And you know what would benefit the schools, honestly, I think? If once a week they had an elderly person come in and talk to children.
Oh, no, you can't have that. They're liable to teach, they're liable to slip out something patriotic might come out of their mouths.
Exactly.
You can't have anyone who comes into school and talks about how great America is. You know, it reminds me of another thing I was thinking in my sleep last night when God said to me, talk radio is going to be bigger than ever because Obama is such a control freak. and has made it impossible with the libs to say anything you believe at work, at home, in the supermarket. People have no outlet but talk radio, which is that how did America develop such a class of America haters? Where did this happen? How did so many millions of people turn out to hate the country that has given them so much? I actually was pondering how this could happen, that there could be so many millions of people, most of whom watch, you know, listen or watch left-wing thing. Why do they hate this country? What do they have to hate? And the shocking part of it is the biggest mouths of hate are usually very prominent who have made their fortune here. And that the only answer to that is liberalism is a mental disorder. It satisfies the answer to that question. Nothing else satisfies the question as well as liberalism, because you reach a dead end and you're thinking, how could a person who makes a fortune in Hollywood, who has audiences that hang on their every move, how could they hate the country? There's no answer or no explanation other than liberalism is a mental disorder. And the confounding element of it, or the compounding element of it, is marijuana. Marijuana perverts the human mind. It twists it in ways that have never been documented. It is the most dangerous of all drugs. You ask anybody in the drug world, in the drug treatment world, they will all tell you the same thing. One of the greatest lies of our day is that marijuana is harmless and good for you. It's poison. It's the most dangerous of all drugs. It is the gateway drug of all gateway drugs. And yet, because of George Soros, again, it seems the guy is the devil. Everything evil in America goes back to this man. $48 million he spends on buying prostitutes who work in the news business, like Christiane Amanpour, who's like a sex worker in Hungary. They're all puppets of this crazed man. But this guy spent money to legalize marijuana in Arizona and California, and I argued with one of his flacks 10 years ago over this, because it's a gateway drug. It's toxic. You name one person who's a heavy pot user who's worthwhile, and I'll tell you what, I don't believe you. And I'll tell you something else. If you do name that person, they're the outlying statistic, because marijuana screws everybody else up. Most people's minds get warped. That's why it's called dope. Most dangerous drug on earth. Ohio, Deborah, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I'm a nurse. But many years ago, I used to work as a radiologic technologist, and I worked a lot with cardiologists.
Right.
And sometimes if we didn't have a real busy day, I would get a chance to look at some of the films with the docs. And one day, this one particular doctor said, we were looking at this film, and he looked at it, and he says, now here is why some people just drop dead, otherwise really young, healthy people just drop dead from a heart attack. And with the film that we were looking at, the myocardium, or the cardiac muscle, contracted in such a way that it actually temporarily pinched off the coronary artery, just long enough and hard enough to cut off the blood supply to the cardiac muscle.
Okay, so what did he think caused that?
Oh, he didn't really give me an explanation, but it's just like...
He didn't know. That's what I'm saying. There's unknown. And that's when we live in a super rational society such as ours, where spirituality and religion is basically pushed to the side. We want explanations for everything. And we think, oh, your blood chemistry is good. You're taking Lipitor. You could still drop dead of a heart attack.
Yeah.
So, okay, but there is sudden death from a heart attack, which could be caused by fright, for example. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah? In other words, you want to go through some explanations? What could do that? Sudden fright. A sudden fright could kill a person. It's in literature, for God's sakes. A person got so scared they dropped dead instantly. It happens to people. Or they got a stroke. Or why? So you look at the autopsy. They had an aneurysm. Well, why the aneurysm? What caused the aneurysm? We don't know. There are multiple factors that are under multiple reasons, rather, and amongst them are the unknown. That's what I was trying to say. So at that point, you have to have faith and you have to pray. You see, that always brings you back to religion and God. You got to ask God every day for forgiveness and ask God every day to keep you alive. That's what you got to do. Why? Because that's what you got to do. I told you that you may not know this. It's Friday. I'll do the religion thing for a moment. Let me see if I have I don't have the... Do you know that and I'm not a religious person. I want you to understand that I'm not. I don't go to temple. I don't go to church. Really, I don't. It's not that I respect people who do. I think it's wonderful. I've never found my place. I've never felt comfortable. I'm not a joiner. People said to me, why don't you join Mensa? I said, how bright can you be that you want to join a group that says you're bright? I mean, what guy says, I'm a member of Mensa, and you're a broke schmuck who lives in Newark and collects old magazines. I mean, so what? You know, anybody who walks around and says they're a member of Mensa is already a suspect, their intelligence. So what I'm saying is I don't join anything. I don't like to join even like the 4-H club as a kid. The only thing I joined that I remember was the Cub Scouts, which I enjoyed very much. But why would you join Mensa? What, to prove you're smart? And what? Can you buy a G550? Can you buy a Mercedes 550? Can you pay $550 to get into a used movie? I mean, come on. Most people who are members of Mensa are broke, by and large. They're just like overweight. They look like Wallace Sheen in like My Dinner with Andre. You know what I'm saying? That's what they look like. You say Mensa. That's what they look like. They have old magazine, like old Look magazine, old New Yorker stacked up in their living room. They inherited like $2,000 a month from their grandmother, and they've never worked their whole life. But they think that they're New York's top intellectual. Mensa. It's like people who go into Sex Anonymous to meet women. You know what I'm saying? It's the same thing. People go into Mensa to prove they're smart. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Back to Via Dolorosa, the Savage Nation. Although with anchovies and B vitamins, I feel a mood change coming over me. Who knows, tomorrow's a crasheroo. No, but the world's coming to an end tomorrow, as I said, so I got to get up early and fuel my boat in case I have to cross the River Styx. It's all very funny stuff. And the Mensa thing, I have a friend who really is a genius, and he said, hilarious, he says, LOL, your shtick on Mensa. He said, it's very true. No, it's absolutely very true. The people I've known in Mensa, I mean, the few people I've known are all basically the same. They look like Wallace Shawn, no car, bad teeth, obese with dirty clothing. And, you know, they inherited a very small amount of money. They're like stacks of newspapers from the 60s and 70s in there. And the New Yorker stacked up in their bedroom. They think that one day they're going to like get to the articles and write something about it. But they usually never produce anything. There's a strange thing about some people with very high IQs are very dysfunctional. It's also true of people with very low IQs, incidentally. I mean, the golden mean tells us that. That's what you would expect. Like, people with low IQs generally don't produce very much in life. And also, it's also true with people with very high IQs sometimes. It's very rare you find people with very high IQs who are also capable of channeling that intelligence into a productive manner and making something of their lives. It does happen. You look at a guy like, let's take somebody for an example, the one who wound up at the top of the Hilton with the... Who was it with the long fingernails, with the spruce goose? One of the smartest men of the last, Howard Hughes, straight out genius. But there was a man who could combine genius with daring, which was very unusual. Stunt pilot, engineer, creates Hughes Aeronautics, a genius in every way. And look how he wound up, what happened at the end of the day with the overuse of the drugs and the mania. You know, I mean, there's no punchline there. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I'm having a good time today. I hope you are as well. I hope you're enjoying the program. I invite you to call us at 1-800-449-8255. Joe in Florida, you're on the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Michael. I got a situation I need some advice on. I'm young married. I'll be married 3 years here in August. And I know that a lot of people deal with this, or a lot of people have dealt with it, and I just need some guidance to get myself right. My wife is really dealing with a depression of some kind. I don't know what. She's up all night, sleeps all day. I come home. I got to do the laundry. I work full-time. I'm working 50, 60 hours a week about. I do
oh, God.
On the side because she doesn't want to work. And
Joe, let me ask you right off the bat. Let me intuitively ask a question. How old is your youngest child?
We don't have any kids, sir. It's just me and her.
Okay, that's one road that I was going to go down of postpartum depression, but it's not to do with childbirth. So when did this depression begin?
I want to say it started about probably the beginning to end of last year. I'd say right.
You in your mind have thought about this continuously. It's probably the only thing you think about. What do you think provoked it?
I don't know. I know that she was never really raised to just be grown up and kind of deal with things, and I had a very rough home life, so I kind of had to grow myself up, and, you know, you just, I have the kind of attitude that you just got to deal with life. That's just the way it works.
So you're the father as well as the husband. You're the father, the, and the, you're the husband, the father, or the lover. You, in essence, are her protector, correct?
Yes, sir.
But did you, from the beginning, were you supposed to be her entire life? Was it set up from the get-go that you'd be her whole life and you would be the only worker, the only breadwinner?
No, she was going to college. She was doing school. She was going to finish up her classes online. And when we moved down here, because I had work down here that very, very good job, and I get paid very well. But she, I don't know what happened. She just kind of lost interest. She says it's homesickness one day. She says,
all right, hold on. There's a lot of truth in that, but this is a big problem in a country where people have to move around for their livelihood. And we talked about that yesterday or 2 days ago with a woman who was going to leave Arkansas to go to Florida for a job, and her son didn't want to follow her. So she left her family behind, correct? Meaning a mother, father, cousin, sisters, brothers?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So this is probably the problem by what you've just told me. Not an easy one to fix. You can't move back because then you won't have a job. Your income is over. So there is your problem. I don't know how to resolve that one, Joe. I mean, you have to talk with her about it. Is there any way to send her back to her family for a couple of weeks till she feels better?
I've tried that, but it's very difficult, Michael. She doesn't even want to do that. And when I come home, it happens about every 3 or 4 months. I'll come home and she'll be crying and very depressed because she doesn't want to be depressed and she wants to do what I tell her to do to try and get
her. How old is she?
She's 24.
Okay, so the age has nothing to do with it. Does she follow a decent diet, or because she slipped down the greasy pole, she's basically not even taking care of herself?
No, I mean, she takes care of herself. She eats pretty well. I know when I cook, because I cook a lot of the dinners and everything, and I mean, I'm a pretty good cook, so I don't cook junk food, and she eats well.
Would she be willing to take any vitamins?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, I'm going to tell you off the bat, and this is no miracle cure, and I'm not saying it's going to solve the problem, but I've seen miracles 30 years ago when I was in nutrition practice. I could tell you from my own life, the B vitamins are intimately connected with mood. And I would suggest that you go out and you buy a B-complex, but it has to be a high-quality brand, at least B50. All of them at the 50 milligram. Some of them are in the microgram level, but just it says B50, okay? Why don't you let her take that in the afternoons along with some vitamin C powder, I mean ascorbic acid or ascorbate if she can't take it, whether it be a half a gram or a gram mixed in grape juice if necessary. Vitamin C crosses the blood-brain barrier faster than any other known substance other than heroin. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
People don't know that vitamin C powder has been used to get people off cocaine and heroin, and I wrote about it in a book in the 80s called Getting Off Cocaine. Believe me, neurochemistry is a mystery in some regard, but vitamin C is such a small molecule that it crosses the blood-brain barrier quite rapidly. And if you can get a lot of vitamin C into circulation, it's an immediate mood enhancer. And if you do that with some vitamin B, I will guarantee you, she is going to feel like a kick in her pants. I don't know. That might jumpstart her.
Right.
It's all I can say. Look, I'm not giving medical advice. I'm giving what I would call commonsensical vitamin advice, which is quite different. Once you go down the road of the antidepressant, you know there's no end to that one. Is she currently on an antidepressant?
No, I really don't want her to go on it. My mom was on them, and it's destroyed her life. And
all right, so before you go down the road of the drug world, which, as you well know, is a spiral that never ends, put her on mega doses of vitamin C and a B-complex B50 and see if that helps. Does she eat a lot of sugar and any kind of sweets?
She loves them, of course. But
bingo. Okay, hypoglycemia. This is so classically low blood sugar crashes. She's suffering hypoglycemia. Go on the internet and read everything you can about hypoglycemic reactions.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
couldn't sleep at all last night. Just thinking of you.
This is the Savage Nation.
Israel wants peace. I want peace. What we all want is a peace that will be genuine, that will hold, that will endure. And I think that we both agree that a peace based on illusions will crash eventually on the rocks of Middle Eastern reality. And that the only peace that will endure is one that is based on reality, on unshakable facts.
Up the shade, turned off the light. I jumped back into bed. It was the middle of the night. The clock downstairs was striking four.
Well, today's big news is the meeting of President Obama with the Prime Minister of Israel, Netanyahu. Of course, yesterday Obama stabbed Netanyahu in the back. Today he backtracked from stabbing in the back and said, "I didn't stab you in the back." He said, "I really didn't mean that you should move back to the 67 borders." What did he mean? In other words, yesterday he did one thing, today he did another. Today Obama went to the CIA and gave a speech about how great they were, while he used the word "I" 37 times. Yesterday the CIA director told his workforce to stop talking about the Osama raid or face legal action. Here comes the president again, punting the ball, taking credit for something again, all over again. Netanyahu said, "Peace based on illusions will crash eventually on the rocks of the Middle Eastern reality." Apparently, Obama is an illusionist who belongs in Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey, not in the White House. Israel says, "No, we're not going back to the 67 borders. We can't. And we're not going to allow a so-called right of return because we would cease to exist as a nation." Of course, America right now has a right of return. We have illegal aliens pouring across the border claiming that they own the land. So we don't have to look to Israel for the West committing suicide. Just look here in California, Illinois, New York, Chicago, Texas, you name it, city, state, doesn't matter what. We have a right of return. All are welcome. The IMF guy is out on a $6 million bail, 24-hour armed guard, ankle bracelet, video surveillance. What else? Nothing. Nothing, nothing. Reid rejects Boehner call for $2 trillion in spending cuts. Sarah Palin says she's got fire in her belly to run for the presidency. An unknown named Paul Lenthi now wants to jump in. Unbelievable. I never saw anything like this. Unbelievable. 1-800-449-8255. Let's see what's on michaelsavage.com. Today we're talking about Netanyahu at the White House, and we're asking, why did Obama stab Israel in the back? Can Israel survive the Obama administration? Do you actually care about what happens to Israel? What does this tell you about Obama? Has Hamas won? Is Obama really the next Arafat? 60 days since U.S. action began in Libya, the 1973 War Powers Act calls for congressional approval of any foreign intervention after 60 days, which expires today. Obama, of course, has told Congress to shove it. China, our good friends in China, are giving Pakistan 50 fighter jets. China has agreed to immediately provide 50 JF-17 fighter jets to Pakistan after a visit from Pakistan's Prime Minister to Beijing. And so there it is. We're getting stabbed in the back by China and stabbed in the heart by Pakistan. Did Obama screw up another much-needed alliance in the Middle East? You betcha. You betcha. Here's what's on michaelsavage.com. Carter's fellow Jew hater says Obama didn't go far enough. That's Zabrinsky. S-A-S-S all the way, hey? Zabrinsky, World War II wasn't enough for you? If you missed yesterday's show, go to Michael Savage and you'll hear me reading from Ezekiel and read what the Bible says is going to happen in the Middle East. There will be a war. Obama and the shadow socialist group behind Egypt's fall. Read all about it on my website. Well, Netanyahu says no to Obama. 4 years since Hamas takeover of Gaza. A Knesset member says Obama is the new Arafat. The Egyptian foreign minister says Hamas is a true partner for peace. Thank you, Obama and Brzezinski and Carter. Poll says mixed views on whether the Bin Laden raid was a gutsy call. Yeah, I don't really know. There was one gun there. What else is on my website? Bin Laden praised the Arab Spring in the audio recording. The IMF chief hired prostitutes from the madam who served Elliot Spitzer, the star of CNN. Chinese to view sensitive U.S. sites. What else? TSA officer arrested at Orlando International. What did he do? He had a gun in the bag. Reynel B. De La Cruz placed a piece of luggage on an x-ray machine at a checkpoint, and he had a gun in the bag. I guess he forgot. I guess he was on medication. How about Atlanta? Teacher urinates in trash can during a class. Well, I guess that's normal behavior in Atlanta. I really don't know. President praises Romney for assist in passing Obamacare. Thank you, Mitt. Entire state of Nevada scores Obamacare waiver. Schwarzenegger former home listed at $23 million. The sperminator's mistress pictures are shown on the website. I mean, who's to account for a man's taste in women or in food? It's unbelievable. He had Maria Shriver. Maybe she was an ice princess. This one looks like a volcano, but okay, he is Austrian after all. A man cannot live by schnitzel alone. There's really not much else newsy out there. I mean, we're just continuing the discussion here on the Savage Nation of All Things Considered. We're going very PBS-y here. And it's another Friday. Obama screwed up another relationship with another ally, embraced another enemy. Japan's embattled utility chief has resigned. I wonder why. He should come to work for the Homeland Security Department. Macho Man Randy Savage dies after car accident. He had a heart attack. Don't know who he is. Never heard of him. Not a relative. He's a wrestler from the 80s. I guess that counts for celebrity. What else is in the news? Terrible movies by everybody. Hobo with a Shotgun revels in tastelessness. Oh, look at that. U.S. home births increased 20% from 04 to 08. Well, rodent of the week, a sad mouse makes scientists happy. Books, have you read Trickle Up Poverty? It's not too late. Well, let's look at the most commented stories. Obama and Netanyahu, after a long meeting, insist U.S. and Israel ties are strong. Oh, sure. Greek markets jolted after another Fitch downgrade. Greek markets, that's an oxymoron, Greek and market. U.S. vehicles targeted in Pakistan car bomb blast. Yeah. Harry Reid, foolish for Democrats to offer a budget plan. North Korea's Kim Jong mentally ill, reportedly in China. L.A. investor convicted of stealing $21 million from clients. Well, he's qualified to run for the Republican ticket. Let's see, no more exploring. Tim Pawlenty, who's he? Never heard of him. Will announce candidacy Monday for what? I don't know. But if you want to go to the election zoo, it's coming up. All this and more today on the Savage Nation. Chicago, Michael, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I found a grocery store by me that has chicken feet, and I want to know if you can tell me how to make chicken soup using chicken feet.
Now, hold on, this is very important because I once did a whole show on how the chicken feet are taken out of the chicken now, and they're sold to soup companies, and the Chinese never buy a chicken from a live market without getting the feet. They know the feet contain essential fatty acids that you can't get from any other part of the chicken. Now, you're talking about the feet now with the actual toes, correct?
Oh, exactly. They have the claws and everything. And I just
The claws. Because I was a kid, I used to eat the feet. I love the feet.
Right.
Well, you boil them. I mean, how hard is it? You put it into a chicken soup.
Okay. All right. I mean,
Do you know how to make a chicken soup? It's the easiest thing in the world. It's like the old joke, can you make duck soup? It's as simple as that. You can never miss with a chicken soup. It's very easy. There's 100 recipes on the internet. I won't bother anybody with it. But if you can, who sells, by the way? Who's selling a chicken with the feet in Chicago?
Well, it's a local grocery store that I live outside of Chicago, but it's a local grocery store, and they sell everything. They have all kinds of parts of everything.
But is it an ethnic butcher shop, or is it what?
Yeah, you could say that. Yes, it is.
Well, what ethnicity do they cater to?
It's a Spanish.
Well, you see, again, here we go again. Ethnic food is very wise food in many ways. And it's the same with the Chinese. They would never consider buying a chicken unless they got all the parts. You go in a supermarket, I don't have to tell you, they take out, you know, the gizzard. They take out the parts that you like to use to make things out of, like the soup and the legs. Yep. It's as simple as that. Just boil it to get in water with all the other parts after washing the chicken thoroughly and salting it and washing it again. and use carrot tops and celery and carrots. You can make a chicken soup quite easily. Again, go to the internet, do Google and say chicken soup, 10 recipes. But you put those feet in, I'm getting hungry myself. I don't want chicken feet, please. I never eat listener food, especially would never eat chicken feet from listeners because I know it's coming in the mail. Dear Mike, Bob and I wanted you to have these special chicken feet that we purchased just for you, Mike, from a listener in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I'm going to tell you, it's this simple. If I believed that God was omnipotent and caused all events on earth, I don't know whether I would live another second, because then I would think God is the most evil force on the planet. I don't believe God is omnipotent. I don't believe God controls the movement of every leaf and every sneeze. I believe God is omnipresent. God is everywhere, but God doesn't control every event on earth. I believe that there are cases where you might say there's divine intervention in a person's life, but even that's a stretch. I frankly think that it's all chance at a certain point. He made the ball of wax called the earth and man and the animals, and to him it's the blink of an eye what's been going on. I don't think he's very happy with the results, but I don't think he controls every bowel movement that you take and every bowel movement that you don't take and every earthquake and every child that dies. And anyone who does, I got another guest coming for you. You're in very, very deep water. Let's go to West Virginia. Barry, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael. How are you doing? I was calling because I heard your story about Barack and Deborah.
Right.
And just wanted to add a little bit. Barack was actually a timid general, and he would not go into war until Deborah agreed to go with him.
Very interesting. So in this case, Deborah could be Hillary Clinton.
Hillary or perhaps another country, waiting until France would go with him. But Barack he didn't want to go into war. He was kind of held back. He was enjoying his life as a general, and he would only go when Deborah went, and Deborah said, that's fine, but if we go into war, I'll go with you, but you won't get the credit for it.
So I take it that you are a biblical a student of the Bible.
I try.
And what do you draw from the story of Deborah and Barack with regard to Barack Obama and the situation of today? Is there anything in that biblical prophecy that you think is relevant?
Well, I think it shows a point where leaders, for example, the general, where leaders are meant to lead and should stand out and to do their job and to lead in a way that's appropriate and in this case, lead in the way that the Lord intended for him to lead. And he refused to do that.
Mm-hmm. But don't you think it's a mark of a man who has disgraced the presidency to be traveling at a time like this? I don't know how else to put it. I think he's disgraced the office of the White House at this time with Libya. How could the man come back and actually speak to the American people with a straight face?
I agree. And in the same case, the general, I think he's really abdicated his responsibility.
How could anybody refer to him as commander-in-chief with a straight face?
Well, being retired from the Army, it's tough. It would be tough.
Yep. Well, I appreciate you listening so carefully to even hear a biblical reference I gave to Barack and Deborah from the Bible. I figure for those of you who read the Bible, the two listeners out of the 9 million who listen to the show, I think you'd enjoy it. There are three things which are too wonderful for me, four which I know not, the way of an eagle in the air, the way of a serpent upon a rock, the way of a ship in the midst of the sea, and the way of a man with a young woman. That's from Proverbs.
For a long time, bullying was treated as an unavoidable part of growing up. But more and more,
bullying.
We're seeing how harmful it can be for our
Ooh,
kids, especially when it follows
harmful.
Them from their school, to their phone,
Ooh.
To their computer screen. The good
it's
news is that there's a growing movement to make our
movement.
Schools and communities places
schools.
Where no one is made to feel alone
no,
or afraid
no
for
one.
Being different, where all of
no,
our children
being different.
Can thrive.
All and no one should be.
Ears and the name that I have.
I stopped for a minute. I said clip one. Okay, control yourself. What is this about bullying? Where did this come from? Why is this an issue? I was picked on every day of my life. It only made me stronger. What is this garbage? You know what I wrote when I wrote my book, Healing Children Naturally, years ago? If Tom Sawyer were alive today, they'd put him on Ritalin. That was then. Now they put him on 5 or 6 medications for being too much of a boy. Listen to the rest of this nonsense from our sappy president, clip two.
I have to say, with big ears and the name that I have, I wasn't immune. I didn't emerge unscathed. But because
wait,
of
wait,
something
wait. Now he's a victim? Hold it. Listen to this. He wasn't immune. He did not emerge unscathed. Now, here's a man who's president of the United States, and he's whining that he was picked on because of his big ears. Listen to this clip, too, again.
I have to say, with big ears and the name that I have, I wasn't immune. I didn't emerge unscathed. But because it's something that happens a lot, and it's something that's always been around, sometimes we've turned our blind eye to the problem.
Yeah.
We've said, yeah, kids will be kids. And so sometimes we overlook the real damage that bullying can do, especially when young people face harassment day after day.
Who is this about? Why don't you just rip the mask off this? What do you mean kids face it day after day? Short kids? Kids with green hair? I mean, who are you talking about? As I say, I was picked on. I feel that you're picking on everybody in this country, Obama, except your minions on NPR. Everyone else seems to be bullied by you.
Savage.
Dr. Zudi Jasser is the president of the American Islamic Forum for Democracy, and he operates SaveSyriaNow.com. Dr. Jasser has repeatedly called for President Obama to sanction Syria's dictator president, Bashar Assad. On Wednesday, President Obama finally issued sanctions against the killer regime of Assad, and Dr. Jasser is now here to give us his view. Dr. Jasser, welcome to the Savage Nation.
It's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, Assad's killing people in Syria, and why do you think the administration was dragging its feet and imposing these mild sanctions on Syria's president, Bashar Assad?
Well, you know, there's a lot of different interpretations of this, but I'll tell you, I think it's almost as if President Obama seemed to have an inverse relationship with, you know, it's almost the less threatening these dictators were to us, the harder of a line we took, the more threatening they were, the softer and more meek we were in our approach to them. Mubarak, who went away quickly, and Gaddafi, who has really no other connections other than himself to the terrorism he's facilitated around the world, but no connections to Iran and other things, seems to have much taken a harder line. And even with Libya, though, it took us a few weeks, but with Syria, which I think is one of the most pivotal nations to switch to democracy, which will break the connections with Iran and Hezbollah, which is one of the least countries that would be apt to go towards the Brotherhood control, and other things, which is in a border with Israel and other aspects in Lebanon. So at the end of the day, I think that it's unfortunate, but finally I think we've woken up to our moral obligation, where the president has levied sanctions not only on some of the leaders, but including President Assad, and has really directed to what I think Americans should start to see is one of the worst, most barbaric regimes in the world, second probably only to North Korea. They've been shooting their people in the streets. On a daily basis, we've had over 800 killed. We have thousands upon thousands that have been imprisoned and are being tortured simply for their Facebook passwords. So at the end of the day, I think that America is finally stepping up to help these people that really want democratic change and to take ownership of their society. And that's why so many Syrian Americans have woken up to help our families and others that are there, our families from Syria, and we're trying to get them to finally be able to get rid of the yoke of oppression of the Assad regime.
Why hasn't the media covered these murders like the ones in Egypt and Libya?
Boy, the media is a whole other issue, and I think that's a great question, is where has the media been? Al Jazeera is one of the only groups that had a reporter in there, and even that, there have been, first of all, the big reason is the Syrian government has completely shut off their government to media. So there's been a closeout there, but you really haven't seen the issue being pressed by Western media. And first, we had some distraction from the royal wedding, and then we had distraction from Bin Laden, which are all, you know, I guess, important stories, but certainly don't rival the humanitarian disaster happening in Syria and unfolding on a daily basis. So, at the end of the day, I think that it's hard to explain. We almost, if you look, for example, at the speech, Obama's speech this week about the Middle East, there seems to be all this focus on him demanding, oddly, to our only democracy that we support, which is Israel, making demands on them, and the media is not paying attention to what he's demanding of a thuggish dictatorship like Syria to finally get them to act. So, you know, it's hard for me to interpret the odd, twisted agenda of the media sometimes, which is to focus on things that put more demands on democracies and other things rather than dictatorships, but I hope they're awakening to resetting our priorities. And I think if you want to look, the polls in the Middle East have shown that we're not very well respected. And part of it is the Islamist agenda that wants to paint America and the West negatively. But the other part, I think, is they see that America is more interested sometimes in self-interest than in standing for morality and standing against the dictatorships there. And I hope the media can start to reassess its own priorities on what is moral and really targeting dictatorships and demanding that they have access to governments like Syria and to help the Syrian people.
What are the Syrian protesters wanting? What are they asking for?
They want, you know, they want the ability to have representative government, to breathe, as the president said in his speech, where he discussed a lady in Cairo who said for the first time she was able to breathe oxygen and the fresh air, where she was able to speak what she wanted. They want the ability to assemble, the ability to have free speech, speak against their government when they're wrong and against policies, to be represented and not have their voices squelched. And actually, I hope your listeners, our country can understand the Syrian people and many of these governments are living in what is called the Republic of Fear. They're living in a state where they are in constant fear of their families, of each other. The Mukhabarat, which is the intelligence services in these governments, include sometimes up to 1 out of 8, 1 out of 9 people. So you've got families reporting on other members. You've got individuals that facilitate a complete suffocation of society. So they want that to end. Many of them have not known any different because the Assad regime and his father beforehand have doing this type of torture and control of their societies now for over 40 years. So they see things different through Facebook and through the internet and say, boy, we want Western-type society. We want freedom, and that's really what they want. They want the UN to come in and help expose the humanitarian disasters. They want the Western governments to be able to hold Assad accountable and finally, like we did this week, freeze his assets, freeze the monies that are really the Syrian people's monies and not Assad's monies. And they want really just equal treatment before the law, a judiciary that's fair and not a tool of the government, and to have all different sects and groups in Syria be respected and not just have a minority family oppressing the community.
Will these sanctions really do anything?
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting that finally when you do freeze the monies of Assad that he has parked, whether it's in Europe or in the United States, which is probably less, but it will begin to isolate Bashar Assad and isolate his family. And the more he can become looked upon as a pariah state than a pariah president of a pariah state, they will become forced into doing things. And already, as much as I don't believe a single word that comes out of Bashar Assad's mouth, at the end of the day, the more isolated he becomes, you see him finally start. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, he was saying to the New York Times reporter, the one reporter he gave her an interview to conveniently, he said, well, really, there's nothing that Secretary Clinton and President Obama have said that really bothers us. He's not saying that this week because they've finally frozen his assets and are beginning to hamstring his ability to function personally. And also what they need to do more is kick out diplomats out of the United States that have a diplomatic presence in America. Our ambassador, I think the president did pull out of Syria. So I think the more we isolate them, the more they're going to be forced, because Syrian president, as much as he's a thug, much more so than even Gaddafi, cares about what the West thinks about, cares about his presence. And, you know, if they did the bizarre thing is his wife did this weird interview on Vogue magazine where she talked about how Western she is and how much she loves the West. Interestingly, Vogue pulled it from their website just a week ago because it was an embarrassment to any Western media to give this type of venue to a thug's wife. But at the end of the day, they pulled it. And they do want some acknowledgement in the West. and they've not, you know, I think isolating him will cause him to finally try to change his country. But I think at the end of the day, we need President Obama to say he needs to go, period. In his speech, he said, well, he needs to go or he needs to facilitate democratic reforms. This guy will never facilitate anything truthful, and I think ultimately we just need to facilitate his departure.
And finally, what do you think of the president's Middle East speech yesterday where he stabbed Israel in the back?
Well, I think, you know, two things. First, as far as President Obama's speech, it certainly was an improvement on the platitudes of vagaries he gave in Cairo a couple of years ago. But at the end of the day, now, you know, he's moving forward with some specifics. As far as what he did right, I think he talked about things like self-determination, minority rights, the ability of people to shed their dictators, the ability of people to, as I said, breathe the fresh air of freedom. It almost sounded like part of the President Bush's freedom agenda when you listen to it. Now, the reality is, and what he did wrong, I think, is ultimately he didn't go far enough. We were a little late coming to help some of the movements in the Middle East. And I think, as we said, in Syria, it took him a while to, over 8 weeks until the people of Syria saw America standing behind them, which hopefully they'll realize we are behind them, but that delay can hurt us. But what he didn't do enough of is we cannot, you know, he equated economic support to reforms towards liberty. And I think that's extraordinarily naive. You can't just throw money at the Middle East or Pakistan and other Islamic majority countries and expect them to reform. We need to help build institutions based on secular, liberal, democratic principles hand in hand. And by doing that, just like we did in Eastern Europe or Poland, Czechoslovakia, and Romania became reformed by us helping democratic institutions. Similarly, if we want Islamism to be defeated, we need to identify that as the ideological problem and help defeat those ideas on the ground and recognize those ideas in speeches like this and say, you know, we love the peoples of the Middle East. We want to help them shed the yoke of oppression, but we will also make sure they don't change one secular fascism with theocratic fascism like Iran or Islamism of the Brotherhood, which he never identified. So all these groups that are vying to fill the vacuum that's happening in the Middle East, we need to have a president that identifies what our strategy is and what the offense is in this conflict, and he did not do that. We're continuing. It had a very defensive strategy, and I'd like to see more offense in the war of ideas and what ideas we are going to push into Muslim-majority countries.
Dr. Zudi Jasser, thank you for being with us on the Savage Nation.
It's great to be with you, Mike. Thanks for having me, and I'd ask people to go to our website about Syria, SaveSyriaNow.com, SaveSyriaNow, and the American Islamic Forum for Democracy that I'm the president of is AIFDemocracy.org, AIFDemocracy.org, and thanks for having me, Michael.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
That fateful night, the car was stalled upon the railroad track. I pulled you out and we were safe, but you went running back. Teen angel, can you hear me?
Rumors have flown for years about Strauss-Kahn, haven't they?
Yeah, there have been rumors about him for years, but nothing like that. You know, there have been rumors of, obviously, him being very, how could I say that, sexually active, and him really having a lot of, you know, stories about him and women. And, of course, there was one at the IMF in 2008, which was really a big problem because he was actually accused of having abused of his position to have a sexual relation with a woman.
Back heaven, poor little girl.
Yes. Everyone, sing along. Follow the bouncing girl.
Every day.
Thanks, heaven.
Back heaven, poor little girl.
You know, I got to say this. I never met anyone with a hyphenated last name who was any damn good. You could put that down, that may be my next book title, by Will Rogers Savage. I never met anyone with a hyphenated last name who was any damn good, by Michael Savage. They even asked Nancy Pelosi what she thought about all of this. Can you imagine? This is a topic they brought up to Nancy Pelosi. Now, she was already, they deep-sixed her. They put her on ice. She almost wrecked the Democrat Party with her insanity and her arrogance and her egomaniacal behavior. They pushed her on the back burner. All of a sudden, they asked Pelosi about the socialist IMF chief, Dominique Strauss-Kahn. By the way, do the French have girls front? That's the one thing. What do you mean Dominique Strauss-Kahn? I will go into that later, but listen to clip three.
What a shame at a time when the IMF is in center stage for what's happening in Europe and Greece, et cetera, and the world financially, to have this disruption. I know they moved immediately to appoint someone in his place. That gives new definition to moral hazard, but it's really so unfortunate. I feel very sad for the victim.
Really, do you? Not for the Socialist Party of France, just for the victim. Who is the victim? Who is the victim? Poor victim. She never had never in her life has anyone ever touched her before. Now, the victim. Where's the victim? Who is the victim? Why don't we see the victim? I never heard of a free society where anyone could say, you touched me, therefore your life is over. What do you mean victim? Where is the person and what is her name? You see, this comes from feminism gone wild, where suddenly all you got to say is, I was raped. Okay, I was raped. And suddenly you're protected. You don't even have to put your name out there. Now, you know that I have the strongest opinion in the world on real rape. I have said it over and over again. Real rape should be punished by castration. But this date rape and fake rape and setup rape is another story. So don't misquote me now and suddenly say Savage is insensitive to women's rights. Okay, I'm the greatest defender of women's rights. But I am not going to sit here and say he's automatically guilty just because he's an obvious socialist pig. I'm simply not going to do it. Just because he's known as a socialist pig in France. Now, in France, this is considered normal behavior. In France, they accepted a socialist stays in a $3,000 a night room and wears $13,000 silk suits. They expect that. And of course, as a socialist man of the people, he has freestanding access on Air France first class. He can show up at the airport at any time and get on a plane, any Air France plane in the world, and go into first class, and they have to kick somebody out. So that the all-important socialist pig can get his seat, you know, and have his van, his champagne, and his truffle on the way back for his important meeting at the IMF, where he could disperse the funds of the people, as we do. So I'm on the way to the boat. I had a heck of a day. I actually was a normal man for one day in the last several years. In the morning, the normal man on Sunday went to a classic car show. Normally, I'm just on the computer, grousing about the horrendous world I live in, the horrible liberalism, mental disorder. Everywhere I turn, there's a disaster. So I go to a car show with an old acquaintance who's a mechanic, and I run into a new acquaintance with the dog Duke, who's on his way to Prague, and we just look at the cars. I tell you the truth, it is so relaxing looking at classic cars. There's no way to describe it. I can explain to you sociologically why men love beautiful machines. I can explain it, but I don't think I have to. Then in the afternoon, I went on the Potomac, it's hard to pronounce, the Potomac River. You have to think of the word tome. And I was on the boat, and a strange thing happened. I went with Mrs. S. On the boat, and within a few seconds, I wanted to leave before the gangway was lifted. The crowd, there was too many people. I generally go out on my boat alone. I'm a boater on the bay, but I usually go out alone with the dog, and I like to hear the water. I don't want to hear people. Okay, let's start with that. As far as catering, I usually don't have food on my boat. I take a roll. I take a slice of provolone cheese. I take a tomato. And when I go out on the bay, I cut the engine sometimes, and I cut the roll. I put in the cheese. I put in the tomato, and I throw it in the microwave. I make a grilled cheese. To me, it's one of the finest gourmet meals with no one talking around me. Nobody, not a word. I get on the boat. I was curious to go on the boat. I wanted to see the FDR's floating White House. And I saw it. I went down the engine room. I went up to the pilot house. I wanted to leave already. It's not that the people were bad. They were very nice people, but there were too many people. I got a claustrophobia attack. So before the gangway was totally lifted, I said, let's get out of here. So it turned into like a comedy where she was off the boat. I was on the boat. I had to lift the thing. Then I lowered the thing. Then the captain said, Mike, you can hang out with us. So I spent the whole time on the boat up at the pilot house. And I really tell you, I had a really wonderful time on the boat. The lamb chops were superb. The caterer was fantastic. Violated my dietary protocols every step of the way. But I learned a lot about FDR's boat. You say, well, why should you? Oh, he was a communist. It was built in 1934 as a Coast Guard cutter called Electra, and she had a 20-millimeter gun on her. And then she was converted to the presidential yacht USS Potomac by FDR as a U.S. Navy vessel in 1936. She's now restored, and she's used basically as a, they rent it out, you know, for cruises. It's a nonprofit organization. It was a fascinating scene for me for one reason. As a boater, one, to see such dedicated people who were dedicated to keeping this museum alive, and it still functions, you number one. Number two, you see how simple the presidential yacht was on the inside. There's no woodwork to speak of. There's no paneling. Compared to today's standards, the boat looks almost like a lifeboat, you know, on the inside. But yet it handles beautifully. It doesn't have stabilizers. She rolled a bit near the Golden Gate. I'm just sharing a little thing. She's 76 years old, and she's still cruising. That's all. That was number two. So now we can thank Dana for the picture on the side.
Savage.